The following is an exclusive presentation of News Radio KMAN, your home for K-State athletics. It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
Did everybody have a little fun last night watching some hoops? Everybody enjoy what happened to the Kansas Jayhawks losing by, I don't know, like 100? I kind of lost count by the end of that thing. And Kansas has some problems. Bill Self even identified said problems after the game, and it sounded very familiar because it sounded to me a heck of a lot like what was being said by Chris Klieman after the Texas loss earlier this year for K-State football. Okay? Do we remember what it was that Chris Klieman said after that game? I've played the quote now a few times because I brought it up when K-State hired Tremaine Carroll to be the new strength and conditioning coach. But here's what Chris Klieman had to say after K-State got 69'd by Texas.
We have to continue to recruit. We have to continue to develop because we're not as close as we are from the fact that we had two games and we lost by a total of 3 points. We're still a long ways away as far as getting kids, not to buy in, but getting kids to be bigger, faster, stronger. That's got to be them making the commitment to say, you know what, I wasn't as good as the kid I went across against today or last week or 2 weeks ago and whatever it was. And I have to take that ownership of myself and get to be bigger and stronger.
Now, I don't have the actual audio from Self himself, so you're going to have to just pretend here. And I don't know that I can do a great Bill Self impression. This is where I need Mason, and maybe I should have called him. But Bill Self said after the game last night, for us to be a national title contender, we need to get more athletic, longer, bigger. I thought our guys played to their abilities well this year, but tonight the length definitely mattered. That is Bill Self, the guy who has run the league, the guy who has run everybody out of the gym countless times in the Big 12, standing there being like, I don't have the horses. I didn't have the bullets in the chamber to compete. And by compete, I mean lose by less than 34 to a 6 seed in the round of 32. That's a pretty deep fall and steep fall from where Kansas has been. And that to me is very newsworthy, not just to make fun of Kansas, which is something we're obviously in the business of doing here, but if you're just looking at it from a perspective of how different the Big 12 is and may be, I think that's very important because that's a telling quote from Self. Not that he could really say a whole heck of a lot differently after last night because I don't know what else he'd say. Like, I'm a brutal coach because I just lost to the Dunk City guy by 34 points in the round of 32. Self has to admit that because he's right. Like, you watch that game, it was like USC looked like a team filled full of NBA talent and Kansas looked like, yeah, you know, a tournament team. And that's not something that we're accustomed to seeing. It was not long ago that Kansas had Joel Embiid on their roster, and he's now a leading candidate for MVP of the NBA this year. Those guys are not walking through the door anymore. And this is not just significant because Self is saying, like, hey, this year we didn't have the horses. It's a bigger picture point here. Like, where is this program headed? Where is Kansas headed right now? The recruiting has not been the same. The facts are the facts. The recruiting has not been the same here lately. And it has not been the same right in the face of this NCAA investigation. With that hanging over everything. With schools like Oklahoma State getting hammered by the NCAA for lesser offenses than what Kansas is charged with right now. And I know that a lot of people say, oh, believe it when I see it. And I still am that way to an extent. But something is going to happen. And for right now, it's probably the worst time to be recruiting for Kansas with all of this going on because you don't know. Like, the uncertainty is a very easy thing to recruit against. At least if you knew what the sanctions would be, you could say, hey, in a couple of years, we'll be through this. It'll be different. Right now, you just don't know. And so opposing teams that are recruiting against you can just be saying, it'll be anything. I'm here and it's going to be Self will get a show cause and be out of there and they'll be out of the tournament for 5 years. People can throw whatever it is that they want at the wall right now. But what that quote tells me is, like, we do not have the same dudes anymore. Whether that's because we can't pay them anymore or have TJ Gasnola running around as the bag man anymore or not, if it's specifically that, or if it's just we have this aura around us that's a negative aura. One of the two, a combination of the two, the reality is it's affecting them. You can go look today. The 2021 recruiting class for Kansas, 2 4-star kids, 1 3-star. The 2 4-stars are not kids that have North Carolina, Kentucky, and Duke offers, which is the class that Kansas used to swing in. That is the circle that they used to run in. Not so much anymore. 2022, for right now, it's a couple mid-level 4-star kids. Kids that K-State would be thrilled to have, one of which is from Kansas and Grady Dick. But again, not Kansas, Duke, Kentucky that's in on Grady Dick. You know, it's like the Texas Techs and Nebraskas of the world that are in on these kinds of kids that Kansas is pulling in right now. If they don't land a 5-star in the 2022 class, Kansas will have gone 4 straight recruiting cycles without landing a 5-star prospect. That's just not something that we're used to seeing. Kansas basketball has been able to pull in a handful of those players. How many of the one-and-dones have they had? It's been a bunch. You know, not just Wiggins and Embiid, Xavier Henry, even all the way back to like Josh Selby. Like, they've been trafficking in that game for a long time. And now it's not happening. And now Kansas is turning into a team full of mere mortals. I mean, even just look at the results on the floor. Like the results on the floor from the last couple of years. 2 of the last 3 years, Kansas has not won the Big 12 title after winning 100 in a row. Yes, it still means that Kansas is a good basketball program. I'm not here to say that they're going to fall off the face of the earth. But what Bill Self identified last night is like, man, we are actually human. We are mortal. This thing is going to be taking a step back from where it has been. I'm sure Self thinks he can get it right back going, but I'm here to tell him that with the NCAA stuff still hanging out there, that's not going to happen. They're going to be competing for a Big 12 championship every year, not winning a Big 12 championship every year. And, I mean, hell, this year, saying that they competed for a Big 12 championship might be pretty generous. So what we saw happen last night was indicative of a bigger problem that Kansas has. That's why, you know, I mean, I have poked around some at what like KU Twitter is saying and what Kansas media types are saying and thinking right now. I think there is a sentiment from some that like, okay, you know, it was like the best game that USC could have possibly played and the worst game that Kansas could have possibly played. I mean, Kansas fans wish that that was the problem. They wish that that was all that yesterday was. But you don't lose by 34 to a 6 seed with that being the only problem that there is. Kansas has bigger fish to fry and bigger issues than that. And I think most of them do actually realize that. Nick Schwert, who is very good at what he does, basically my counterpart at KLWN in Lawrence, he's the host of Rock Chalk Sports Talk there, he said this, and I thought this was funny because I had forgotten about this. He said, the season began with fans roasting Jeff Goodman for claiming that Kansas didn't have enough talent. And it ended with Bill Self saying Kansas didn't have enough talent. And fans going, well, duh. Because there was a tweet from Jeff Goodman earlier this year at the beginning of the season saying that Kansas didn't have enough talent to compete at the high level that they're accustomed to. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's what it said in essence. And he got destroyed. He got rolled by Kansas fans for saying that. And now at the end of the year, the head coach is saying that. Bill Self is saying that. And you think it's going to be snap your fingers and the recruiting is going to be better while you're still waiting around for the NCAA investigation to wrap up? I don't think so, man. So we'll see. Another thing that I saw from Kansas Twitter today was, hey, have to go land an impact guard in the transfer market or else, you know, this may just be a borderline top 25 team. Like, man, doesn't it feel good to know that Kansas is sitting around saying the same things that K-State is saying about the basketball program right now? Better go hit that transfer market. Better go hit that transfer market. And speaking of, we did get news today. It came out about an hour ago or so that Mike McGurl is coming back. So Mike McGurl will be back at K-State this year. And I know that toward the end of the year, like we had this debate I was not really crazy about McGurl coming back if it were going to be like he is automatically penciled in as one of your starting guards and in the same role where he's going to play as many or more minutes. Some things have changed since then. Like, he did play a lot better at the end of the year, but it's not even so much that as it is we've just seen Rudy Williams left. We've just seen Dejuan Gordon left. And I know Dejuan was playing the four a lot by the end of the year out of necessity. But you're losing, like, some wings and guards. You also lost points. I know Dejuan can't shoot, but you lost points with Dejuan there. With my lack of faith in what this coaching staff can land from the transfer portal, I would say, like, begrudgingly, like, yeah, I guess that's a good thing that McGurl is back. I would reluctantly say yes. Just based on what's happened and where the roster's at right now and how I feel about this coaching staff being able to bring somebody in the transfer portal that would be talented enough and a good fit. Like, don't have a whole lot of faith in that. So because of that, yeah, you take McGurl. A guy who scores 12 points per game. He didn't shoot it all that well from three-point range this past year. He's shown a penchant for being a little bit better than that throughout his career. And if I'm going to sit here and say, hey, a big part of the reason losing Dejuan really hurts is just somebody that had been in the program for a couple of years and developed, you know, I mean, I guess I have to say the same sort of thing about McGurl. I just still think his ceiling is limited. He turned it over a lot this past year. There's a lot that would need to be shored up. And he didn't have the excuse that, you know, a Nigel Packer, a Davion Bradford, or somebody that was totally young and youthful on his team this past year had for some of those mistakes happening. It's okay. I don't think it is nearly as impactful as if they can land a transfer that can really shoot the ball. But for right now, the situation that they're in, yeah, shrug the shoulders and say, fine. Come on back, Mike McGurl. That's okay. Here's Bruce Weber's statement on it. He says, we're excited to have Mike back. We're happy he has the opportunity to build on his tremendous progress that he made this season and become one of the elite guards in the Big 12. You know, I mean, I guess the other thing I would say about it, if you were out here preaching and thinking about the sinking ship kind of analogy or sinking ship kind of situation for like, oh man, look at all these transfers adding up, like Petrakis is leaving, which, I mean, okay, guys, if we're really throwing him in there as evidence that, nothing against Joe Petrakis, but if we're throwing him in there as evidence that like the sky's falling and it's a mass exodus, like, come on. Like, he was a walk-on that got a scholarship for a semester. He was not going to get one next year. I think we can see what's going on there. But if you're saying Dejuan, Antonio, Rudy are all leaving, it's why would Mike come back now? It's going to start this domino effect of more. You know, this would be an indication that's not going to happen. This would be an indication that it really was more along the lines of like, hey, Dejuan said, I want to be the number one option. I want to be a top scoring option on this team. And the answer was no. And he said, all right. As opposed to like Marcus Foster, ship is burning, abandon deck, everybody get out of here. So, okay news. I hope that doesn't mean it's just everybody sitting around being like, okay, got this taken care of. Still need to go hit the transfer market. I would still prefer to see a guard who is better than Mike McGurl come in here. I think that is necessary if you're going to make the tournament. You need a guard or a wing that is assuredly better than McGurl if you're going to make the tournament next year, which in turn is what I think needs to be the case for Bruce Weber to continue to be the coach and get a contract extension. So that's where we're at with that. But we will have some fun with Kansas throughout the show the rest of the day today. Coming up next, going to talk to Kevin Flaherty. It's been a little while since we have chatted with him, national college basketball writer from 24/7 Sports. We'll ask him about what Bill Self had to say, and as a guy that covers the Big 12 pretty closely, how much jeopardy does he think Kansas is in of becoming more ordinary than they'd like to be? You're listening to The Game. All right, John Kurtz back with you here on The Game. Stephen Schaefer filling in for Mitch, who is doing baseball tonight. You'll hear that starting at 5:30 out of Wichita. Kevin Flaherty joins me right now, national college basketball writer with 24/7 Sports. Appreciate the time, Kevin, for joining me. As you can imagine, here around Manhattan, we are taking some time to revel in what was, well, to be honest, the greatest K-State basketball victory of the season last night, courtesy of the USC Trojans over the Kansas Jayhawks. How surprised were you that Kansas got beat the way that they did yesterday?
You know, I thought that there was a chance that it could get out of hand, to be honest with you. I didn't think that it would get out of hand to that extent. You know, and I think that it's so fascinating when you look at it, at sort of the ups and downs of this season, you know, across so many different schools. And yet this is a Kansas team that earlier this year, you know, early in Big 12 play, took the worst ever loss that it had ever taken at Allen Fieldhouse when they lost to Texas. And then you get into the NCAA tournament, and not only do they wind up taking the worst NCAA tournament loss in Kansas basketball history, but it almost doubled up the margin of the previous worst loss, John. I think that was 18 points in 1940 against Indiana. And so losing by 34, you're talking almost twice the margin there. And it's interesting because a lot of the critics of this Kansas team have really pointed to the lack of talent and the lack of sort of Kansas-ness, I guess you would say, in terms of the way the Jayhawks look when they come out. And USC has two former five-star big men, and they played like it. Isaiah Mobley had a terrific game shooting the ball, and Evan Mobley basically shut down everything that Kansas wanted inside the three-point line. And not only did it get out of hand fairly early, it was a 19-point deficit at halftime, but it got a lot worse from there, and I think that was as surprising as anything.
Yeah, and to that end, Bill Self said after the game last night, for us to be a national title contender, we need to get more athletic, longer, bigger. Thought our guys played to their abilities well this year, but tonight the link definitely mattered. You know, I mean, I hear that, and I think he's basically saying the same thing, right? They didn't have quite the same level of talent, and I would theorize that it's not as easy on the recruiting trail for him right now with the NCAA investigation hanging over him, especially at this point because you don't know what it is. At least if you had some finality with it and you knew what it was, you can say, hey, you know, in a couple of years this will all be over, or whatever the punishment's going to end up being. How much do you think that is going to be an issue for Kansas until they know what happens, and then obviously if they have to deal with sanctions after that?
It's 100% the biggest issue, and it's interesting because, you know, when you turn 18, John, and you know, you probably did this before you turned 18, but when you go to try and get a cell phone, right, if you have bad credit, you can still get a cell phone. But if you have no credit, if you haven't had a bank account, haven't had a job, and you try and go and get that cell phone, it doesn't work. They won't let you do it. And so it's funny because you look at it, and you say, well, wait a minute. Somebody who's already proven to have bad credit, wouldn't they be a worse bet than somebody that could possibly have, you know, good credit? And the reason I bring that up is so many of these teams that have faced NCAA sanctions, whether it's in football or whether it's in basketball, you hear the coaches talking about afterwards how even if they've gotten just absolutely nuked from the NCAA, it was better after the verdict came, because they knew what they were dealing with. They could go into a kid's house and say, okay, we've got a postseason ban. Okay, we're facing scholarship reductions, whatever it is, but here's the plan for getting it back. When you don't know what it is, it's almost worse, and you can't really fight back against any arguments where somebody else is going in and saying, oh, man, it's going to be really bad. You don't want to go there. And I think that's absolutely the reason that when you look at Kansas and sort of the lack of talent compared to what they've had there, I think that's the biggest reason for the struggles. And until they get that decision, I think it's going to continue to be an issue.
Kevin Flaherty is talking with me, national college basketball writer at 24/7 Sports. Just one more on Kansas. I mean, I know you're a pretty connected dude. What do you hear and what do you expect as far as that NCAA ruling is concerned?
I would expect something to come down over the course of the next year or so. I don't know. And by that, I mean the next calendar year. I would be somewhat surprised if we don't know something by January 1st. I don't know if that's going to come this summer. I don't know if it's going to come in December. And I'll be honest with you, John, I don't know if it's going to come by way of the Independent Review Council, if it's going to go there, because there's so much risk involved with that council for both Kansas and the NCAA. So if you talk to an attorney about Kansas's case, and I have, you know, multiple attorneys actually, they say that if the review council treats it like a court of law, you know, where there's a shadow of a doubt, innocent until proven guilty, et cetera, that the NCAA could be in trouble and Kansas could potentially get off. But here's the problem. You don't know that that council is going to act that way. And so if somebody is able to draw reasonable conclusions or look at things, you know, innuendos and things between the lines, there's not necessarily a smoking gun here where you have Bill Self on a recording saying, yes, I paid this player and I'd do it again. And so that's the thing there is what level of, you know, nobody really knows how this council is going to decide and how they're going to look at these things. So there's high risk for Kansas. It's high risk for the NCAA because if they do look at it like a courtroom, they can't take another loss like they did with North Carolina. And I think that when you look at it from that perspective, I think there's a lot of reason for both sides to kind of come to the negotiating table and say, okay, what can we do to keep this out of that format?
Kevin Flaherty, National College basketball writer, 24/7 Sports, talking with me. Man, the Big 12 was off to such a good start there in round one, and then Texas goes out and it all comes crashing down. What do we take from the Big 12 struggles in round two of the tournament? How indicative is that of what the league actually was this year?
Well, you know, Nebraska always blamed Texas for all the Big 12's problems, right? So you got to start there. But in all seriousness, you know, the Texas loss I thought was probably the worst one. A lot of the other ones, you know, even if the margin did get away from Kansas, I thought that, you know, that was a rough matchup for Kansas. You know, you could kind of see that coming even when the bracket was released, that Kansas was going to need USC to have an off day or play really well to win that game. And when you look at Texas Abilene Christian, I just don't think there's a reason you can look at that game and say, okay, Texas should have lost this game. Abilene Christian shot, you know, incredibly poorly. You know, Texas had experience up and down that roster, had talent up and down that roster. John, when we looked at it before the season, we figured that Texas had a top five roster in college basketball. We didn't necessarily know if they were going to be a top five team. But when you looked at it, they returned every single minute except for six from last year, six total minutes. And that was played by a walk-on. And so when you look at all that, you add in a top 10 player in Greg Brown with all that talent on that roster, all that experience on that roster, that was the one that was most inexplicable. Most of the rest of them, you can kind of, you know, maybe look at, you know, matchups here or there. You know, you could say that if Kansas and Oklahoma State had flipped, where Oklahoma State was taking on USC, I don't know that Oklahoma State would have been that bothered by USC's length. And Oklahoma State might be in the Sweet 16. I don't think Kansas would have been that bothered to play Oregon State, and Kansas might be in the Sweet 16. So a lot of it you can look at and say, oh, it's matchup dependent, the bracket just didn't work out, or whatever else. But Texas losing to Abilene Christian is the one that kind of jumps out where it's just you throw up your hands and wonder why.
Yeah, what does it mean for Shaka moving forward? Because, you know, if you are Texas, you have to look at it and be like, yeah, the guy put together a really talented roster. They had a great regular season. How do you reconcile that with no tournament wins, though, in his time so far?
Yeah, it's a wild deal. And, you know, one of the ironies is you get bounced by a team that, you know, runs press, which was one of the big reasons, and I covered Texas back when Shaka Smart was hired, covered Texas specifically as a beat writer. And one of the reasons they hired him, and John, I know you've seen, you know, Texas games where there's been a pretty good opponent coming down to the Frank Irwin Center, and the place is empty, right? When they had Rick Barnes there, and they would be playing a top 10 team or something, and the place wasn't filled. And so a big part of the reason they brought in Shaka wasn't just to win. It was to play a style of basketball that was aesthetically pleasing that would get people to come out and watch. And they haven't really ever run havoc there. And so when you add that sort of to the fact that they haven't won tournament games, it kind of compounds, because not only have you not won at that point, you also haven't necessarily brought out the style of basketball that was the reason that you were hired in the first place. I'll be honest with you, I know Shaq has got a decent sized buyout at this point, but I think that loss, depending on how certain boosters saw it, it might have been the last game that Shaka Smart coaches at Texas.
Wow. Wow. Kevin Flaherty talking with me from 24/7 Sports, national college basketball writer. I've always been a huge Scott Drew guy. I've tried to advocate for years. I think it's unfair. Some of the reputation he had is just a guy that rolls the ball out there and has these talented players. And now it feels like everybody's coming around to, okay, this dude can really coach. What do you think about Baylor's matchup with Nova and just the overall draw that they have there and their odds to get to the Final Four?
You know, it's kind of wild because when you go back and look at the preseason polls, I think in the AP poll, Baylor was 2 and Villanova was 3, and in the coaches poll, Baylor was 1 and Villanova was 3. So you've got two of the, you know, the supposed national title contenders before the year squaring off in the Sweet 16, and Villanova had kind of a similar time where they came back from their own COVID pause and their defensive rotations weren't quite as good, and they dropped a few games because of that, and then Colin Gillespie got hurt. But they've been playing a little bit better lately, you know, with Chris Archidiakono joining the starting lineup. He's brought a lot of steadiness to their ball handling, and I think that's going to be one of the keys to this game is Villanova is so deliberate in what they do offensively. You know, they know where they want to go. They know where the ball is supposed to get to. They know how to create open shots. And a lot of that stems from the fact that they don't turn the ball over. And since Archidiakono has climbed into the starting lineup, and specifically in March, they've got 12 turnovers combined over two games. If they can take care of the ball against Baylor, Villanova could have a chance to pull off this upset. But that's a pretty big if, because you're looking at, you know, obviously Davion Mitchell being arguably the best on-ball defender in the entire country, you know, Mark Vidal being able to do his different things. But at the same time, you know, Baylor's main weakness defensively has been that they don't really have a center, and Jeremiah Robinson Earl is a guy that could be able to feast inside for them. So this is a really interesting matchup for me. I still think Baylor has what it takes to get out of that one, but it's maybe a little bit trickier than people are giving them credit for.
Kevin Flaherty, national college basketball writer, 24/7 Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at KFlaherty247. Always appreciate the time, Kevin. Great to catch up with you, and enjoy the hoops coming up this weekend.
Thanks a lot, John. Appreciate it.
All right, Kevin Flaherty again with me here. Some very interesting stuff there. That Shaka Smart could be his last game. I mean, I tell you what, from some of the Texas folks that I follow, including my buddy Brad Kellner, who does sports radio out in Austin, it does seem like that is some of the tenor around there on what exactly that loss means for Shaka's future. All right, we found the spring football breakout star. That has been officially decided today after the comments made by Joe Klannerman and some of K-State's defensive players. That's a bit of a hint, but I'll tell you who it is coming up next. There's just so much content, so little time today. Off at 5:30 because of baseball. Kansas getting blasted last night. Spring football audio. And I'm going to give you in just a moment the new Khalid Duke. Remember, Khalid Duke was the star of fall camp. We didn't have spring ball last year. This is your spring ball superstar that we're hearing so much about from all different angles. But I don't even really have time to properly cover this. There is a newspaper in Chicago. It is not it's the Sun-Times and the Tribune, right? Are those the two main ones? It's like the third paper there. From what I understand and what Google told me, it's the third biggest paper in terms of circulation in Illinois. It covers like the Chicago suburbs. They have a columnist that wrote a Brad Underwood needs to be fired column after losing to Loyola. Okay? Said it was embarrassing and that not just Brad Underwood needs to be fired. It was a Brad Underwood needs to be fired so that Illinois will go hire Porter Mosier, the head coach at Loyola, to be the guy. Which is just, I mean, look, Porter Mosier would be a great fit at Illinois if they didn't have a guy right now who took them to a number one seed. Bleep happens in the tournament, man. It just does. Like, you have games like that. Loyola was underseeded as an 8. You've seen it everywhere if you're on Twitter at all and follow the tournament. They were a top 10 Ken Pom team, and they wound up with an 8 seed. We make fun of Jesse Newell, but there's something to following Ken Pom. Ken Pom knows a little something about what he's doing. Not sure what Mitch Pom had Loyola as. Ken Pom, though, is pretty smart. He had them as a top 10 team. You got a bad break. You don't need to be firing Brad Underwood, okay? But if they did, now wouldn't that put an interesting proposal on Gene Taylor's doorstep? not going to happen. But just wild. That is wild. And we could do a lot of show content on that. Let me give you this spring football answer, though. The guy that we have heard the most about has been somebody that I'm very excited for. One of the transfers, which I take as a very good thing, means that there's an influx of talent. Okay, Julius Brents. It's Julius Brents. The transfer from Iowa at corner. He's got great length. He's got an NFL-type body at corner. The belief around Iowa was that this is somebody who absolutely can be an NFL corner. Iowa did not want to see him go. Here is what his defensive coordinator, Joe Klanderman, had to say about him.
I think he's been outstanding. I think in the transfer market, I think we went 4 for 4. And Julius is somebody that established himself right away as a dominant athlete, an alpha male type athlete. He's learned what we're doing. He's transitioned really well into what we're doing. He's made plays. You know, he's not a guy that just does it right but can't make the play and finish when he gets the opportunity to. He's going to be a good one. I mean, he's going to be somebody that people will know.
On paper, he was the transfer to be the most excited about. Munoz, good story. Seemed to fit the culture. Position slightly more of need at linebacker, but didn't feel like he had the upside of Brents. Yeast, similar-ish. Would have been the second most excited I was for a transfer. And I'm talking, when I say four, I'm talking like defensive transfers here, I guess. So I'm leaving Imad or Bebe out. Second would have been Russ Yeast, but he just didn't quite have the measurables. Like, he didn't have the body that Julius Brents does. And Timothy Horn, you know, played at a lower level, fairly productive. I think he'll be a nice rotational piece at defensive tackle, but never had this feeling like this is like a big-time stud. Brents was the one that really reeked of that. When you look at how tall he is, like 6'2", 6'3", a corner, with that kind of length, man, you'll love to see that. That's the kind of kid that K-State is going to have a hard time bringing in, somebody with that sort of body just straight up out of high school. And they definitely need corners. Still a position where they do need some depth. I mean, Joe Klanderman said today at nickel, for instance, they're having to play Wayne Jones and Ryan Hennington, who are both linebackers. They're having to play them there right now just because they don't have enough healthy bodies. So they clearly need help at corner. It was still a position of need. And then hearing what Derek Young told us about the feeling at Iowa, and Derek, who used to cover Iowa, is very plugged in there. The feeling at Iowa was like, this kid's an NFL player. So if you could have given me a choice and said, hey, pick one of these dudes that you want to hear Klanderman going off about and players going off about in spring ball, yeah, it would be Brents. It would. I mean, I guess it would be tempting to say Munoz just because I don't feel great about what's there at linebacker, but Munoz is one that I feel like if I would have heard that, I would have chalked it up to, well, they love his attitude and they love all the intangible stuff and his backstory and what he brings to the program. They're just gassing him up. They're talking him up. This is somebody, like, I can see with my own eyes the athleticism and talent that's actually there. You can cut through some of the BS with that you might just be getting from coaches. At a time when, again, it's like spring training for baseball. Spring training, everybody shows up, best shape of my life. So-and-so's in the best shape of his life. Hope springs eternal. All this stuff. Nah, that's what spring football is right now for everybody, too. And we're hearing plenty of that about multiple different things with the team. More today about the attitude and togetherness and kumbaya and all that. And I don't say that totally mockingly because I buy into it to an extent. How much does it actually mean when they take the field? Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But Brents, I think, has legitimate significance because I can see the pedigree. I know what's been said about him. And I know what his body type is. And if you then combine that with the praise and being like, yeah, this dude's a beast. He's going out there and making plays. He's going to be a stud. I can start to listen to that and legitimately really buy into it and believe it. Here was this from Eli Huggins about Prince.
I think he's going to be a great player here. Everything I've seen so far, he's a big dude out there at corner, and he's looked incredible so far in practice. So I expect a big year out of him.
And that was just asked, like, who's really impressing you? Fairly generic question. You know, sometimes we play these clips, there can be like a question that sort of leads you down that road. Not the case here. That was a generic, like, who is impressing you question. And we got that from Eli Huggins. Not the best audio that we had today, though. Certainly not the most useful audio that we had today, because if you are trying to get your beach body ready to go for this summer, Wayne Jones has what you need to hear to get your beach body ready, and we'll play that for you coming up next. All right, everybody is trying to get that body ready for the beach. You know, go on a trip somewhere, get your vaccine, everything opening back up a little bit this summer. You need to get that summer body, okay? We have the man for you. That is Wayne Jones. Now, it's interesting that he is the guy with the diet tips today. K-State safety turned linebacker, because you'd hear that and be like, well, he probably needed to bulk up some, right? Right. He's added 15 pounds. But apparently in doing so, it was all about like adding good weight, and he had to cut out more junk food, ironically, in order to actually gain the weight. Regardless, he's got good tips for you here on what exactly it is that you need to do if you are trying to get your summer body ready to go.
Chicken breast and broccoli, steak and broccoli. That's probably my top two meals.
Okay. Is there anything you had to get rid of that you were sad to quit eating?
Probably bread. That's my favorite. It's probably my weakness. So probably the bread.
Chicken breast, steak, broccoli, ditch the bread. That's it. That's what you got to do. If you want to be jacked like Wayne Jones for the beach this summer, that's the plan. Now, I would also say, if you want the beach body for summer, all you need to do, not all, but most of what you need to do, come by CrossFit 785. They'll get you taken care of, okay? But also, the diet tips, that's not bad there. I don't think it has to be quite that stringent, though. I wouldn't be eating bread all the time. I agree with him on that. But I mean, Wayne, like, you can mix in like a sweet potato or some brown rice, something like that. I personally am very big on corn tortillas these days. I don't know that those are quite as good for you. You may not want to totally take that advice. But I've been led to believe that they're certainly much better than flour, and I like to make like little taco things out of them. And, you know, the biggest key here is just meal prep, all right? Make sure that you have the different protein sources there. And then, yeah, mix in some vegetables, mix in some good complex carbs. That's basically it. It was some pretty sound advice from Wayne Jones. Now, I don't want to throw any shade to K-State's nutritional staff or whoever it is that's telling him to eat that. It would seem to me, though, that it would be very hard to get a college safety to add 15 pounds by simply eating chicken breast and broccoli. The steak makes a little bit more sense. I mean, especially depending on what kind of steak it is, you know, it could be calorically dense enough to add some of that. But I heard that and was kind of like, really? Like, you're able to add, like, you, college athlete, going through spring practice right now, and how many calories you're burning throughout a day, like, you can actually put on weight while eating chicken, steak, and broccoli? I mean, it seems like there has to be more. Some protein shakes before bed, like something. Anyway, ditch the bread, people. Ditch the bread. What's been the funniest part of the last 3 weeks for Kansas? We'll explore next.